Let's go to Paul, who's on the line. Paul, what's your view on this?
Hello there. I just wanted to make a very simple point that when it comes to this issue, Chris, there's only one relevant question, and that is, what is the unborn? If the unborn is not human, then no justification for abortion is necessary. But if the unborn is human, then no justification is adequate, because we don't take the life of innocent human beings for the reason that people have abortions. If a woman takes the life of a newborn or a toddler, we don't say, well, you know, we trust women, or the circumstances were so traumatic or whatever. She doesn't have the right to take the life of an innocent human being.
Is it not more complicated than that, Paul? Because we're talking about, as Dawn mentioned earlier on, we're not talking about fully developed humans here. We're talking about developing. And listen, I think everybody certainly would accept that these are incredibly difficult decisions.
But Chris, you have to get the distinction between the difficulty surrounding the issue and the actual moral issue. A newborn baby's developing. A toddler's developing. You know, a child at 10 is developing. Your level of development, you don't get more rights the bigger you get.
So if the mother's life is in danger, do you think on occasions that does allow for an abortion?
Well, if we're talking about the issue being the intrinsic value of life, well, then it's better to save one than lose two. But you know that is such a tiny, tiny percentage of a very small percentage of abortions are done for that reason.
The point is, though, in those circumstances, and sometimes it is about a woman's mental health, sometimes it is about, you know, her long-term health. You are making decisions there for saving one life over another.
Yes. Well, no, I mean, there are better options than taking an innocent human life. And again, a woman might have traumatic issues with a baby she's had. There are better options than taking the life of that baby. If the unborn is a human being, then no justification for taking an innocent human life is adequate. Okay. There are better options than taking innocent human life.
Okay, Paul.
To think that an abortion is going to just make all the mental health issues go away, I think is a very simplistic, naive view.
I don't think anybody thinks that, Paul, but these are all very difficult scenarios that we are talking about. Let's go to Eamon, who's on the line as well. Eamon, hiya.
Hi, Chris. You know, hard cases make bad law, and I wish we could get some facts out into this debate. Now, I'm no expert, let's start from there, and it's a while since I looked at any statistics on this, but I think it was 2014. The birth rate in England was almost a million. There were 480,000 abortions. Nearly half of all pregnancies ended in termination. The fetal survival rate in England is now lower than in sub-Saharan Africa. And the major cause of fetal death is abortion. Now, don't tell me that all of those are extreme cases.
Dawn Purvis, are those figures that you recognise?
No, they're not. They're not figures that I recognise. Sorry.
Well, look, I'm sitting in the car here on the middle of the road, and I'm not in a position to look up references.
Chris, I can certainly comment on those.
Okay, Peter.
Peter here. So there are about a million live births. There's about 200 abortions. So for every four live births, there's one abortion. And so there's a huge number, and it's very significant. So I certainly agree with him, and it is the biggest cause of death amongst unborn children is abortion.
So that would be one in five. That would be 20%.
It's in and around that kind of number. It's 200,000 abortions are carried out a year, and I think the number of live births is somewhere close to a million.
Well, that's actually a sixth then, isn't it? That's a sixth, which is significantly less, I think, than the figures you were quoting there, Eamon.
Hang on,
you're both speaking over each other. Eamon, go ahead.
I'm sitting in the car here. I'm not in the position to look up references. I could do that I don't want to argue about the figures because just let me say one more thing
quickly.
You're 400,000. Okay, the figures vary, but even if we're talking about 1 in 5.
1 in 6.
1 in, well, 200,000 out of a million is 1 in 5.
No, it's 1 million live births, 200,000 terminations is what Peter Linen said, which is 1 in 6.
Right, it's still a lot.
And I don't think anybody would disagree with you on that, but I think
you know,
the,
really,
I think the issue that I was going to point to you is that the difficult thing here is you said I think we need to bring statistics and bring some hard facts into this. The problem with the issue of abortion is it's not often about hard facts. It is often about people's personal circumstances. It is often about difficult scenarios and difficult background stories to what has happened. And I think that is why sometimes the hard facts can be difficult to put into it.
You can't ignore the hard facts. And the point I'm making is that I don't accept that 1 in 6 pregnancies needs to be terminated for extreme reasons. And the point I'm making is that hard cases make bad law. It's not that we don't need to provide for the hard cases, not being unsympathetic, but if you proceed on the basis of emotion without regard to the facts, we are liable to make a bad situation even worse.
Don, I know you wanted to come in there, so go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, people are Eamon was talking about the number of abortions, and when we start to talk about statistics and numbers, we get away from the personal issues. And banning abortion doesn't make it go away, doesn't mean that there are going to be any less abortions. It just makes abortion unsafe. And
that's not true.
It actually is true.
Let Don finish. So I promise I'll let you come back, Peter.
If we look at countries where abortion is banned or there's severe limitations on abortion, then we can see that the number of abortions that are the number of illegal abortions that are carried out in those countries are the same in countries where abortion is available. So you're not going to reduce the number of abortions just by banning it. Women access abortion service for a whole host of reasons, and it's not some stereotypical teenager who has had a one-night stand, as people would like to think. The majority of women one in three women will access an abortion at some point in her life, and that the majority of women that access abortion services are actually in a relationship using some form of contraceptive and already have a family. Now we need, and it's not about legislation making bad or hard cases making bad legislation. We already have hard cases; they're already happening. Abortions are already being carried out at late term for reasons of serious fetal abnormality and serious risk to the woman's health. The argument here that we're debating is whether we should decriminalise this and make it a healthcare issue.
And in terms of that decriminalisation, I asked Dawn the question earlier on, Peter. From your point of view, Peter Linus, do you think the decriminalisation would lead to abortion pills being freely available?
Well, it appears so, and the Royal College of Midwives said that part of they were responding to, and they mentioned abortion pills. And so Dawn has given us some very helpful facts in one sense, in saying 1 in every 3 women will have an abortion. That's probably true for England and Wales. We know that there are 200,000 abortions there, so we know pro rata what it is in Northern Ireland. There are about 50 abortions on one of the last set of stats here. We then know that 892 people travelled to England and Wales last year. They can give an address, even if we said a few of them were underrepresented. Even if we doubled that number, you would still have 1 abortion for every 25 live births here in Northern Ireland.
That's
we are the
true, perfect Peter, because we don't know the amount of women that travel and buy pills.
We do know because you give an address, and so we have to register each. So we've got 892 registered in Northern Ireland. There's no reason not to give the correct address. Even if we doubled that, just to say some people might be underrepresented, we are in the best Western healthcare system with traceability, and we know with accuracy these numbers. So that's why it is the perfect test. So we're saying it's 1 in 25, 1 abortion per every 25 live births in Northern Ireland,
well, I
1 in every 4 to 5 in England and Wales.
I think we have to let Dawn come back on that, Dawn.
Yeah, I mean, we can use the figures that are officially collated, but it's only the tip of the iceberg. We know for a fact that many women
We simply don't know for a fact.
Yes, we do. We know for a fact that
many
women
What's your facts, Dawn?
Well, there's a study being done at the University of Kent very recently that has looked at the numbers of women who are accessing abortion pills illegally over the internet. So there are more and more when if we look at the Republic of Ireland, for example, in 2014, there were 1,300 packages of abortion pills intercepted by the customs in the south. Yep.
We do. So I can say that there are countries in the world in which abortion is banned and we know it's not safer, and she can't use those facts and then ignore Northern Ireland, which is the best test case because it's one of the places with the most limited access to abortion and the best healthcare records. And so we do know the facts from here. And we do know there's a massive difference between England and Wales and here in the number of people having an abortion. There is not one in three women in Northern Ireland having an abortion. We just know that. And you've said one in every three women in England and Wales will access an abortion.
Around the world, it's actually around the world that one in three women will access abortion at some point in their life.
And we know that's not happening in Northern Ireland.
It is happening in Northern Ireland, Peter. And I think we need to wake up to the fact that abortions do happen in Northern Ireland. They happen legally, they happen illegally, and we need to try and put the woman at the centre of this and say, do we want to continue to criminalise women, prosecute women, send them to prison for accessing a healthcare service that's not available to them or they're too poor to afford? And if that's what we're continuing to do, then I'm sorry.
I think that's the fundamental difference between where Dawn and I are, Chris, putting women at the centre on one hand and putting both lives at the centre.
I think that's unfair to Dawn. At the end of the day...
Dawn should say that, but she can't reinterpret her words with all due respect. She just said we want to put women at the centre, and I've said I want to put both lives at the centre.
Dawn, do you want to respond to that?
Well, you can't separate the unborn child from the woman. And the woman is an autonomous being. Let her make the moral decision for herself in consultation with her clinician, rather than impose your own moral and religious views on her.
In terms of the we're discussing these hypotheticals, there is also a practical reality at the moment. And abortion pills have been mentioned a couple of times. We should, of course, say that people should not purchase them online. They may not be suitable. You may be risking your health. And that comes from among other organisations, Murray Stopes, which was the organisation Dawn used to be a part of as well. But I did wonder, Peter, you have seen the concern over prosecutions as regards those women who have purchased or been given abortion pills. Do you think those prosecutions should take place?
So two things to clarify. First is it's exactly the same law in England and Wales as is here, and there have been prosecutions here. So there seems to be a kind of myth out there that somehow Northern Ireland is the only place that does this. This is the law in both England and Wales and Northern Ireland, and rightly so, as a backstop. That says, in the end, if somebody wants to continue to try and terminate, regulations aren't going to kick in at that point. And so at the very end, this sits under the criminal law because it is another life. It goes back to Paul's point, either this is a human being or it's not. And if it is, and the criminal law recognises some level of personhood, then it has to kick in at the very end and say, if all else fails, if you're going to circumvent everything else we put in place, healthcare provision, coming to clinics, then, and this is England and Wales as well, if you're going to circumvent that...
Have you been surprised then by the politicians' reaction, which has been very much... There's been a lot of concern about the prosecution. You've seen that in the newspapers. You've seen that being discussed on the airwaves as well, I'm sure.
And the judge has discretion, as the judge exercised, and said, yes, this hits the criminal law sanction because that's our backstop, that's our end game if all else fails. But in the first case, it's gone before the judge. He said, but it's not appropriate. A custodial sentence isn't appropriate. And I have absolutely no problem with that. I think that seemed to me the judge used their discretion very wisely in that situation and said, this is what the law says we have to do. But we also have to be clear that is the law. And there's no ambiguity about that law. So this is the same law in England and Wales where you can access abortion up to 24 weeks. But if you go outside of that, you cannot take the law into your own hands, and that's what's being proposed here, that you can circumvent our law.
Dawn, very quickly.
Well, I think it's interesting that Evangelical Alliance advocate that women be prosecuted and sent to prison for what is essentially a healthcare issue, and I think we need to remove this criminal sanction and treat women with care and compassion in consultation with their clinicians.
Let's quickly squeeze two more views on. Liam is in Draperstown. Hi, Liam.
Hello, can I speak to Dawn there?
You're speaking to her directly.
Hello, Dawn.
Hello, Liam.
You want to hold on to your life as long as possible, so why should we impose death on a baby, and all this talk about the heartbeat apparently of a baby starts maybe is it 28 days or something after conception. If you're in hospital and they're judging you to be dead, your heartbeat is going to be taken into consideration.
Okay, and I think Dawn has addressed that point. Rob in Belfast, do you want to give us your view?
Good morning, Chris. How you doing? Chris, I've listened to this conversation right the way through this morning. I mean, quite disheartened, to say the least, at the lack of compassion that I have heard. I think the only person that I have heard compassion for the woman for has been from Dawn Purvis. You know, let's get real about this. When we have a woman who has potentially been sexually assaulted and as a result been impregnated, you know, the mental health repercussions that will have, not only in the short term while carrying a baby, but also in the long term, is going to be absolutely devastating.
Well, I'm sure that everybody involved in this, including Peter Linus from the Evangelical Alliance, would say that they have showed compassion. Thank you to you, and thank you also to Dawn Purvis as well.